two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Andy Farnsworth, and welcome to another episode of Fan Effect. Today, we are continuing our interview series ahead of FanX 2019 in the spring. Today, we're going to be talking with Scott Weinger, most known for two roles. One is the voice of Aladdin in Disney's 1992 animated feature Aladdin, plus all the about any time you've heard Aladdin ever since then. It's been Scott Weinger. And also as Steve Hale from Full House. So enjoy. Scott, thank you so much for joining me here on Fan Effect today. You're coming to FanX next week, and I appreciate you taking some time now before you get here next week to talk about some fun stuff.
Hey, Andy, it's my pleasure. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to the trip.
Now, you are an actor, voice actor, writer, producer. Your face is probably most known as Steve Hale on Full House. Your voice as Aladdin in Aladdin. And once those two worlds even crossed into each other, I'm speaking, of course, of the time in a 1993 episode of Full House when you appeared in a dream as your character Steve dressed as Aladdin.
Yeah, that was a fun Easter egg for the fans. Although I don't even know if we called them Easter eggs in those days. I don't know if we knew the term. But basically, yeah, DJ goes to Florida to visit her. They go on a big Disney World vacation, and Steve, her boyfriend, didn't come. And she misses me so badly that everywhere she goes, she sees me. So not just Aladdin, but Prince Charming and Indiana Jones. And then finally, you know, she sees me dressed as Aladdin.
Now, whose idea was that?
You know, it's funny. It must have been the writers of the episode. I think it was, you know, the people who were running the show at the time, Mark Warren and Dennis Rinsler, must have had that idea. But it would have been a crime not to do it. That was at the height of Aladdin fever. You know, Aladdin had came out in November of 92, and it was a big hit. It was the biggest movie of the year. And so I think it was on everybody's mind. So it would have been to not do an Aladdin, have an Aladdin moment would have been crazy.
I love meta jokes like that. It was like when Mark Hamill went on The Simpsons and was dressed as Luke Skywalker, but he was being Mark Hamill. That's the kind of stuff I love.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, people, I'm always impressed when people come up to me and say, hey, they recognize me and know that I'm the voice of Aladdin. They make the connection. And I think it was sort of, a really fun, it's a fun pop culture fact. And I guess because both of those things, Aladdin and Full House, are always a big part of my life. So I always just assume that everybody knows. But I get people all the time saying, I just found out. I had no idea.
I've got to be honest. I didn't know that you were Steve until not too long ago. I only knew you as Aladdin. I have a question. So as somebody who's in that situation, how did that make you feel? Did it bug you at all, or were you glad to do it that way?
To
have the crossover, the meta kind of a thing like that.
Oh, I loved it. It was great. Well, you know, that particular year that we shot that episode, two episodes in Florida for Full House at Disney World, that was a huge Disney year in my life because I was there so much promoting Aladdin and there for Aladdin-related events. And then we're there for weeks and weeks shooting the Full House episodes. So if you add it all up, I think in that year I must have spent at least 2 months at Disney World in Florida, which is not a crummy way to spend 2 months when you're a teenager. It's
no,
really fun.
Not at all.
You know, I got to skip the line, so what could be better than that?
Well, that's the VIP treatment right there, when you don't have to wait in the line. I've always said Disney's greatest illusion is the illusion from the fairway that the line is short on the ride that you're going to go into, because they hide the length of it so well.
Yeah, they have this amazing system now with all the fast passes and this and that, where they keep the line moving pretty fast if you plan it right. But I was so spoiled. I never had to learn the system. They always gave me the royal, they treated me like a prince.
Well, that's funny.
Which was really nice.
I noticed that you were a writer on Black-ish, and they had an episode where the Johnson family went to Disney World and got to skip all the lines for two of the days, and then on the third day, they had to be like regular people, and it was the worst.
That's so funny. Well, you know, it's true. Like, it definitely spoils you. It definitely spoils you. I was a lucky kid, and I'm very fortunate that...
Can you still line jump now?
Occasionally, but, you know, I have a son, and I'm trying to not ruin the experience. I don't want him to get spoiled and not be able to enjoy a regular day like a normal human being at Disneyland, because that's a really... It's an important value to teach your kid that, you know, you... And so, you know, there have definitely been times when he's gotten to skip the line with me, like where he's gotten the benefit of being Aladdin's kid, but then there have been plenty of times where we'll get online for Splash Mountain and it'll say 90 minutes, and I say, suck it up, kid, we're waiting the 90 minutes like everybody else.
Well, that's good.
He's experienced both, yeah, but he, you know, it would be cruel, though, to be the son of Aladdin and be denied once in a while, you know, going around the back.
I was going to say, you should probably have a lifetime line jump pass for that.
I'm sure my son would agree with you.
You originally voiced Aladdin when you were around 15. How did you get into voice work at that age?
Honestly, I was not into voice work. You know, I was already a kid actor. I got into acting when I was 8 years old. I was a miserable athlete, so I didn't have any after school activities, and I got really involved in like children's theater and things like that in Hollywood and Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where I grew up. And so I started doing professional acting down there, like commercials and local productions. I think when I was 8 or 9 years old, I was in Miami Vice. But by the time I was 15, I was out in L.A. working on a TV series. Before Full House, I was on this show called The Family Man. And one day after work, my mom said, you have an audition today. And I said, what's it for? I said, she said, some cartoon. We had no idea.
Some cartoon.
To this day, I'm very grateful that she said to me, some cartoon, because if she knew, if we weren't so ignorant about what a big deal it was, if we knew that Aladdin was going to be this huge movie and this big classic that I'd still be talking about decades in the future, I would have tanked the audition. I would have been filled with anxiety. So
you would have got in your own head?
For sure. Well, you know, I mean, that's, you know, some people are like Tiger Woods, where when the heat's on, they perform at their absolute best. And that was just never me. Whenever I knew, like, this is the biggest audition of my life, forget it. I would blow the whole thing. But if I just thought it was no big deal, I would go in there and be myself and be very natural and not, you know, I wouldn't get inside my own head, and I would give the performance that I was hoping to give. So my ignorance was a huge benefit to me for the Aladdin audition and my lack of experience. And then, by the way, I didn't get the part right away. 6 months later, I was back in Florida, back in school, and the show that I had been working on was finished, and they called and said, we're still interested. Will you mail in a tape? Can you send? In those days, you would just record a little tape and FedEx it or mail it to the place. And so me and my mom recorded a video, an audio tape that we mailed in. And they said, Scott's performance is okay, but we love the mom. So my mom for 5 seconds thought she was going to get to play the genie. But, so yeah.
It was her and Robin Williams were the final two.
They were the final two. If Robin said no, it for sure would have been my mom. just tell her that if she asked.
Now, you didn't sing your character's songs. That was done by Brad Kane. Was that always the plan, or did you even get a chance to like sing as a part of your audition, or did you have to coordinate voices so that they sounded similar? I mean, did Disney have all that figured out?
I had learned in my, you know, by the time I auditioned for Aladdin, I was maybe 15 years old, and I had been a professional actor for 7 or 8 years, and I had learned that at an audition, if they ask you if you can do something, just say yes. If they say, can you roller skate, say yes, and then get the job and learn how to roller skate. You know? And so they said, can you sing? And I said, yeah, sure. I said, I'm not a Broadway singer. I've never, you know, but I can carry a tune. They said, great. Well, here's the sheet music and here's the tape and go practice. And so I came back and I did my very, very best. But that was the one and only time I ever got to sing for Alan Menken. And it didn't go great. It didn't go. I you know, I did my best. By the way, that tape is in the Disney archives.
Your singing audition?
Hopefully. Yep. Hopefully it'll be buried forever, but someday I'm sure they'll dig it up. But
do you ever karaoke songs from Aladdin? I have to ask.
You know, that's a great, I don't think I have, but I'm not also, I haven't done a ton of karaoke. I think the last time I did karaoke was when we were shooting a Fuller House episode in Tokyo, And one night the cast went out and did a lot of, we got a private karaoke room and sang our hearts out. But I don't remember singing any Aladdin songs. I don't know. I would have been self-conscious about it. But it would have been a fun way to, someday I should do a duet with Brad Kane just to showcase his phenomenal voice.
To showcase his voice. So you can make sure that everybody knows why they cast Brad Kane to sing.
Yeah, exactly. But he, you know, he did such a beautiful job. His voice is gorgeous, and he, you know, my mom just reminded me of this because I was a kid. I don't really remember this, but apparently after I got the part, they liked my speaking voice well enough that they were sort of sold on me. But they knew that they had this dilemma that they had to find someone to match my voice to sing. And so apparently, my mom said that we went out to lunch with someone who was tasked with finding a match, and we went out to lunch, and she just recorded us talking, just recorded the whole conversation, and then went out. And I have no recollection of this, but my mom remembers it. So, but they did a great job. And Brad and I, we're still buddies. We still bump into each other. We're both television writers, which is a crazy coincidence.
Oh, that's cool.
So he and I, and we're both dads. So we both, I think, more than ever appreciate our part in Aladdin, you know, because it makes our kids think we're super cool.
Now, you've been voicing Aladdin for over 25 years in sequels, TV series, video games. Do you try to sound as close to the same as you did in 1991, 92?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I go back and I hear the original movie and my voice obviously is not the same. It's not the same as when I was 15 years old or 16 years old. But there's a certain, I mean, I'd like to think that they agree with me because I still played the role. Just a couple of weeks ago, I had a recording session for a big Aladdin project, some secret thing. But there's always like a
Kingdom Hearts 3
thing. Yeah, no, wouldn't that be cool? No, it wasn't that. It wasn't. There's always some new technology. There's always new Aladdin products and video games and so, or even Disney on Ice or something. And there's something in my voice that's very, I can still do it. I go to these recording sessions and I'm worried. I'm worried that I'm not going to be able to find the Aladdin inside my voice. And then it comes out, you know, it's a very high energy thing. And, you know, I just look for the most youthful and energetic aspect of my personality and it manages to, I've been doing it so long, it just happens kind of naturally. Someday when I'm an old man and I am talking like this, then maybe they'll have to find a new Aladdin or they'll just replace they'll just change Aladdin and make him old.
I was going to say, finally age Aladdin.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's, you know, the funny thing is in the sequels and in the series and stuff, he did get older because he and Jasmine get married and I think they even become parents at one point. So like, you know, Aladdin is a grown up too. You know, he's not the same 15, 16 year old kid that he was when I first got the part either. So we've aged together.
Do fans ever ask you to repeat lines of dialogue from the movie?
All the time. All the
what do they ask for most?
It's funny because like this is one of those. I'm still recovering from this weekend's third grade camping trip. We didn't sleep at all, so my voice definitely is not very Aladdin-y today. But yeah, some of the lines they asked me to say. They say, "Will you say for some reason this?" I don't even know if I say it in the movie, but they say, "Carpet, let's go." They love that, or they love, you know, the. And of course, I think the most famous line that Aladdin has in the movie is, "Do you trust me?" People always ask for, "Do you trust me?"
Do they ask for you to do the little eye cock thing that Aladdin does in the cartoon?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny that I was just talking about this with somebody that you know, the animators, and particularly Glenn Keane, because he was in charge of animating my character, and he's this legendary, incredible Disney animator. I think he's retired now, but he would come to the sessions and sketch me while we were doing the recordings, and I think refer back to those sketches. You know, I think it's helpful when you're hearing the recording and animating the scene to go back and look, and they would videotape me. So I definitely feel like there's definite, not, you know, beyond my voice, there were physical aspects of my mannerisms and personality that made it into the character. So, which is pretty cool.
You've got some great stories, Scott. We're talking with Scott Weinger, who is actor, voice actor, writer, producer. We talked about Aladdin. Now, do you have some time to talk a little bit about Full House and Fuller House?
Yeah, sure. We haven't started. We're getting ready to do our fifth and final season, which is crazy. But I have no idea what's coming because the writers just got together to start writing.
I was going to say, so you've played the role during two different periods of your life, both as a teen and again as an adult. What is it like to revisit a role like that? I mean, did you have to rewatch any old episodes to get back into character?
You know, it's funny. I fell back into the character pretty quickly. And I didn't start watching old Full House episodes until long after we had started. I just didn't think I needed it. I didn't need the reference because it was a part of my life for so long. But then I started watching, you know, the series with my son, and we started at the beginning. We started, you know, way before
you came
on the show. So I learned things about Full House I didn't know before, and backstories of characters. And it definitely helps as a reference to go back and remember specific episodes. But at the same time, that character has been a part of my life for so long since I was. I think I first played Steve. But the funny thing is, I didn't play Steve Hale when I was 16, but I played this one episode I did. The character's name was Steve Peters. And then when I came back as a series regular the following season, when DJ comes home from her summer in Spain and she's got a new boyfriend, my name was all of a sudden Steve Hale. And
they never explained that.
Yeah, they never explained how Steve Peters became Steve Hale, but that's sort of, that's just another fun thing for the fans. Like, I think people who are diehard fans have a lot of pride in knowing the little details like that, which I find cool and fun.
How do fans' expectations and their love for the characters of Steve and DJ bleed over into real-life interactions with you?
I notice it when I post a picture of my wife on Instagram. Like, I'll say, you know, so, like, we had a great trip to, we went back to Japan for Christmas, and we were there, and I posted a picture, and my wife and I in Tokyo, and we said, what a great way to celebrate the holidays or something, and everybody said, not DJ? I just always imagined you with DJ. Like, it ruins the fantasy of Steve and DJ when they see a picture of me with my real wife of 11 years. And so, but
well, hopefully they do that to Candace also with her NHL husband.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, yeah, she's been, you know, it's funny. I haven't been a public figure for a long time. I was very content in my life as an anonymous television writer and not really super into social media or being a celebrity or people that, you know, somebody that people necessarily recognized on the street all the time. And this Fuller House thing was a big surprise and a little bit of a lifestyle change. And my wife always says, whenever she catches me doing something actory, like getting on the scale too often or skipping pizza night because we have a taping coming up or something, she says, I married a writer.
But, just to remind you.
Fun. Yeah, exactly. But it is fun for me, I have to say, to see how invested the fans are in Steve and DJ's relationship. And I really have no idea what's coming, you know, in season 5, but I would like to think that there's going to be fireworks. I'd like to think that Steve and DJ are going to get a happy ending as the series ends.
I mean, if Steve and CJ broke up, there's no other way that this could end, right? You've already not ended up together twice.
So. Yeah, well, you know, as somebody who's really invested in the character of Steve and in the relationship of Steve and DJ, but also as somebody who's written many episodes of television, they've got to end up together. That's what I would do, but I'm not one of the writers, so you got to take it up with the showrunners and see what choices are made in the writer's room. But hopefully the fans will be really happy. We're doing a bigger season, you know. This ordinarily we do 13 episodes, and for this final season we're doing 18 episodes, which gives them an opportunity for a big episode 9 cliffhanger and then, you know, hopefully a really satisfying season and series finale. I think the writers are going to have a lot of fun this year coming up with a lot of cool stuff.
Well, I think that's interesting because I was going to ask you, as a writer, did you ever suggest stuff to the Fuller House writers? Did you ever give them notes or anything like that? Or is that like a taboo thing between writers?
No, it's cool. You know, and some of the writers on the show are people that I've worked with in my writing life. And I knew from before Fuller House as a writer. And, once in a while, if I think there's a, you know, all the actors on the show feel very comfortable pitching a line that they feel like, oh, you know, I mean, I've been playing this part for 30 years, so I know that my character might say it this way instead of that way or whatever. But the writers do a great job. They're very true to the voices of these, you know, the characters that have been around for a long time. And every once in a while, I'll feel the urge to pitch a joke. But for the most part, I let them do their thing. I remember for me, you know, for somebody who had been, I've probably like produced more episodes of TV than I ever acted in. So it was a very natural thing at the table reads to have a pencil in my hand to jot down notes or whatever. And then it took me a while to remember, I don't need to hold the pencil. I'm here to read my lines and not bump into the furniture.
Well, now you've written episodes of 90210, The Muppets, Blackish, Gallivant. When did you go from being an actor to deciding you wanted to write? And I guess, at least looking at your bio and credits, it seems like you write for TV mostly.
Yeah, mostly TV. Well, you know, being a TV writer is a very specific kind of lifestyle. It's the closest thing to a 9-to-5 that you can have in, like, on the creative side of show business, I think, because you know, especially if you get on a series that goes for a while, you go, you know, 8 or 9 months a year. If you're lucky, you're on a show that's doing 22 episodes or even 24 episodes. And it's a great life, you know, for somebody with a family. It's a great, it's the closest thing to a normal life that you can have, and also still be in a room and be creative, be with a bunch of writers all day breaking stories. And I've always wanted to give it a shot. And then I think when I was, you know, sometime in my 20s, I made a decision to start writing spec scripts and trying to do it, you know, the old-fashioned way. I didn't want to be considered like a dabbler, somebody who was sort of doing it to kill the time in between acting jobs, you know. So I really did. I took my first job was as a writer's assistant on a sitcom, and I really learned how to do it from the ground up. You know, it was really cool taking notes and keeping the writer's room organized. It was a great, you know, sort of learning writer's room culture and writers, you know, how the whole thing works. And so, you know, I worked my way up over over a number of years, and God, it's really fun. I have to, my biggest, you know, inner conflict about taking the job on Fuller House was that I was going to miss being in a writer's room so much, because it really is fun. But I don't regret it. This has been great, and I'm sure soon enough I'll be back in a room complaining about lunch. And
do you prefer writing comedy or drama? Because you did 90210 and you've done like Black-ish and The Muppets. Which do you prefer?
You know, I'd love to do both, but I think I prefer being in a comedy room, because a good part of the day is spent just trying to make the other writers in the room with you laugh, which is really, really fun. You know, it really keeps you sharp being in a room full of really smart, really funny people who are just always on their toes and keeping you on yours. And I can't describe what it's like to work in a writer's room. It really is. It's really cool. And sometimes you're there till 2 a.m, so you better like it. And the room smells like Chinese food from 6 hours ago. And it's still really fun. I'm the guy that's always happy to be there, even after a long, tough day. I really enjoy it.
What's it like to write a show where the characters were created by someone else? You know, like, I've always imagined that a writer is somebody who you create the characters so you know them, and that's how you write them. But what's it like when you're someone else and you step into, like, your episode of Black-ish was somewhere in the mid-run for how long it's gone so far, where you step in and now they've created both personalities, styles. I mean, I think specifically of like the character Charlie. I love Charlie on Black-ish.
He's so funny.
Probably my favorite. So how do you jump in and sort of keep...
Yeah, in my episode, he had an emergency tracheotomy on the kitchen table. He's allergic to peanuts or something. But, well, you know, honestly, that's really the key to being a working, successful television writer. Most of the time, unless you have one of these one-in-a-million careers where you're just creating show after show, but most of the time you're writing characters that were created by somebody else. And so, you know, part of breaking into the business is writing spec episodes of other shows and showing that you can write voices of people that you didn't create and making them your own. And, it's really one of the hardest and one of the most important parts of the job is being able to come into whatever show you're working on and write an episode that you can hand over to the showrunner and they'll feel like they don't have too much work to do to fix it because you nailed the voices and nailed the characters and don't say things that this character would never, you know, you have to sort of be able to hear it in your head like, oh, this would never come out of this particular character's mouth. And, you know, sometimes you're still finding it. If you're in season one of a show, you have a lot of liberty to sort of see what works and what doesn't work. But if you're coming in on season five, you better know that the character would never say that or would be more likely to how they would respond to a certain comedic situation.
A couple questions real quick before we wrap it up about FanX. Have you been to FanX or a Salt Lake, formerly Salt Lake Comic Convention before?
Never. You know, this whole world of coming to any kind of conventions is new to me. I was sort of scared of it for years. I don't know why. It just seemed, I don't know, it was just a new experience. And Linda Larkin, who's the voice of Princess Jasmine, had gotten into it. And she said, you know, it's really fun. You know, you get to meet a lot of fans and you get to sort of see the impact that the movie had on people and what a big deal it is in their lives. And it's really gratifying and cool. And, this is my first FanX and one of the first times I've ever made an appearance at one of these, conventions.
Well, we're glad we're going to get a chance to be sort of your first time.
I'm excited. Yeah. My wife is a TV writer also, and she worked for years in Park City and in Salt Lake on, the show Everwood. So Salt Lake's a big deal to her and a big part of her life, and we've gone back several times. We were just in Park City this summer for one of the actors from Everwood got married there, so we were just back. We love it.
Well, that's really cool. Well, we're excited to have you back. I've got a silly question that I just have to ask because I'm your age. You're 10 days older than me. I was really cool. I thought that was really cool when I found that out.
Oh, that's cool.
So I got to ask you about this. It's I call it the line. Back in the days before YouTube, there was just whispered legends about a line from Aladdin to Jasmine that nobody noticed in theaters, but when it was out on home video, it started to make the rounds.
Yeah, oh yeah, you know, that is a total urban legend. That is not, are you talking about the sort of like raunchy line that Aladdin supposedly says on the balcony?
Whatever he says, I just, my personal experience, that was the first time I thought, that's bull. I put the videotape in and I about hit the floor because I thought, oh my gosh, that's really in there. Now, I've listened to it enough times that I don't believe it is what it is anymore, but for a second...
They have websites dedicated to this, like the JFK assassination, where they play it in slow motion and they just prove that it's true. And I'm like, guys, you could prove it all you want. It just never happened. I think, you know, we did a lot of improv because we were doing, especially with Robin Williams, there was a lot of improvisation and stuff like that. And I think, you know, I'm scared of Raja the tiger. So I say, good kitty. I go, take off and go, or something like that. And, you know, I guess over the years, it just proves the brain is really, if you want to hear something, you're going to hear it. But it never in my wildest dreams would have occurred to me to say something raunchy at an Aladdin recording session when I was, you know, just happy to be there. So,
well, that's what I was going to say, is I figured if anybody could put it to rest, it's the person who would have voiced the line that supposedly was in there.
Yeah, no, totally never happened. And, you know, but the funny thing for me, though, is, it introduced me to the world of like internet conspiracies and fan theories and stuff like that. But it also, in a way, is sort of gratifying because it makes me realize what a part of how Aladdin is sort of baked into our pop culture. You know, it's part of, it's just, it's in the canon. It's just like, it's just out there. It's just, it makes me feel as weird and creepy as the rumor is. It makes me feel honored to, it sort of enhances the movie in my eyes as like a part of, I mean, like they don't make up conspiracy theories about things that aren't important. They make stuff up about the Beatles and about Paul being dead. So
that is...
I think it's cool that there's a conspiracy theory about Aladdin.
How does the original voice of Aladdin watch the new Aladdin?
Very carefully. No, I'm just kidding. I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen the trailer?
I've seen the trailer. And in fact, I took my son as my date to the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards recently. And they had a huge thing of, you know, the cast were there. Will Smith was there. And the actors playing Aladdin and Jasmine were there. It was really cool. And my son was like, we got to go see that. I said, absolutely. So, but I'm going to be experiencing it, you know, the same way as everybody else. I haven't seen it, or I don't have any inside dirt. But I have a feeling it's going to be good.
I was hoping you were going to say that you got a small cameo in the movie. Maybe you were the prince in the trailer that appears on like the far thing that Will Smith makes appear and then disappear. I was kind of hoping you'd say that you did that.
I would have absolutely said yes. Nobody mentioned it to me. They never asked, but I would have done it. But maybe they wanted a little separation between the two movies or something. But yeah, no, I don't. I had no involvement, but I am. But I am, as somebody who's like, Aladdin's a big part of my life, and I'm super invested in it, and I'm excited about the movie, and I hope it's really good. And I'm also excited that, you know, there's a whole generation of kids who may have never even seen the original Aladdin who are going to experiencing it. They're going to experience it for the first time because of this movie, and then go back and watch the animated movie. So whenever it becomes a part of the culture again, I always find it very exciting because you're introducing it to a generation of kids who weren't born yet, which is pretty cool.
Well, Scott, I'm glad you're finally getting the FaceTime that you deserve so people can see. I've always thought that the one shame of some of the Disney movies is for like Aladdin and for Beauty and the Beast and even The Little Mermaid, that if you didn't know who the voice actor was before the movie, like, you know, Gilbert Gottfried or Robin Williams or Angela Lansbury, that there was never really a big deal made out of who created the character, you know, behind the scenes. And so I'm glad that you're getting your due. As somebody who works with his voice, I'm glad that you're getting your due and that everybody gets to see that it was you that created that voice and the character, because it, you know, especially with Disney, getting that voice, that's as important as anything else that's on there is the voice.
Well, thanks. I think so. And I was just talking with Ron Clements, who's one of the two directors of the movie, and he was saying that the voice, if the voice is the right voice, you know it when you sit down to animate the scene and you can tell it's going to be fun and easy to animate the scene. And if it's the wrong voice, it's going to be difficult. So he was saying, it's interesting. I've learned a lot about the whole process. I think animation is amazing. It's such an interesting and cool art form. So really, it's an honor for me to it's an honor for me that I got to be a part of it, which is as a huge fan of it.
Scott, if people want to follow you on social media, what are your Twitter, Facebook, anything that they could go to follow you?
You know, right now, I'm not a huge social media guy, but the only place where it's easy to find me is on Instagram. I'm just at Scott Weininger on Instagram. And I post pictures of, a lot of
photos. You post pictures of not DJ, apparently.
Yeah, get people really upset. They're like, who is that? Who is that dark-haired lady you're with? That's not DJ. But I post pictures. You know, not a ton of, like, personal stuff, but definitely work photos from Fuller House and definitely behind-the-scenes stuff whenever I'm doing anything related to Aladdin. So hopefully it'll be a fun place to visit and sort of check up on me, see what's going on in my life.
Well, Scott, I hope we get a chance to meet face-to-face at FanX when you're here next week. We're excited to have you come. And thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
Yep, I'll be there. I guess it's just in a week or so. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Fan Effect. We really appreciate you joining us, whether you came from social media or whether you're a longtime subscriber. We'd love for you to become a subscriber. If you're not, go to iTunes Podcasts, search Fan Effect, EFFECT, become a subscriber. If you're a longtime subscriber but haven't left us a review on iTunes, please do so. And please feel free to share this with your friends and anybody else. We've got more great interviews coming up from FanX, so become a subscriber so make sure you don't miss any of them.